You're listening to the Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast. Here's the deal. If you make disciples by sitting around and talking, you shouldn't be surprised when your disciples sit around and talk and talk and talk. This is the podcast for those weary of just talking and ready to start activating in the mission Jesus gave us to change the world. The Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast, where disciples and disciple makers gather to grow and go together. Here's your host, Dr. Matt Friedemann.
All right. So very good to have you with us today, friends, on our Life-Changing Discipleship Podcast. Listen, I'm thrilled to have a special guest on today, one of my favorite guys in the whole world, a gentleman named Dr. Jerome Van Kuyken. He's a dean and associate professor of Christian thought in the School of Ministry and Christian Thought at Oklahoma Wesleyan University, a place where I have visited and very much appreciate. Jerome is an ordained minister in the Wesleyan Church. He is a Wesley Biblical Seminary alumnus, which, of course, is where I work. Actually, can I go ahead and say former student? So I like to take as much credit as I can for guys like you that are out here flat getting it done. He earned his PhD from the University of Manchester, and he's written and edited lots of things. A couple of my really cool things I like to hand on is The Creed We Need, which, by the way, Jerome, we did a podcast on that. And you're the only guy I think I've ever had back on the program. So there you go. You're a winner. So The Creed We Need, which, by the way, is about the Nicene Creed. Also, he has written The Judas We Never Knew, which is a book apparently about Jude. And apparently is great because I endorsed it. Do you remember that? I endorsed it. Yeah. That's a fun book. If you all want to read something really clever, really fun, and extremely insightful in the book of Jude, remember that the Judas We Never Knew. You can get the volumes on Amazon.com. And he is he has a brand new volume out right now that he edited called Reclaiming the Order of Salvation, Evangelical Wesleyan Perspectives. And Jerome, in all fairness, I think they ought to know, I have a chapter in that book. So here we go. I'm promoting us today, mostly you, because you edited it and put it all together. And thank you for that. Jerome, welcome to the program. Thank you.
Thanks.
Listen, this is an edited volume, so there's a number of individuals that came to play on this. And real quickly, how did that all come together? It had something to do with the Evangelical Theological Society?
Right. Yeah. So I am the chair of the Wesleyan Studies Group at the Evangelical Theological Society. And so for 3 years, we went through a series of papers. We had presentations on the various parts of the Wesleyan order of salvation, the kind of the roadmap from starting out in sin and ending up in glory. And so then I pulled together those papers and found a publisher for them. And so now it is out.
Yeah. So order of salvation, there's going to be a lot of people say, yeah, I know exactly what that is. And there's also going to be a lot of people don't have a clue. So let's talk at a very basic, fundamental, easy to understand level. What is the order of salvation?
Right. So one kind of anchor text for this in the Bible is Romans 8, 29 and 30, where the Apostle Paul walks through those whom God foreknew, he predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. And these he called and then justified and glorified. So Paul seems to lay out these steps or an order in which salvation comes into our lives from beginning to end. And so the Wesleyans have developed an understanding of it. There are different groups. Lutherans have their own understanding of the order of salvation, and Calvinists do, and so forth. But in Wesleyan circles, I've noticed there's a tendency not to necessarily talk about it too much lately. And so I wanted to make sure that people were being reintroduced to this idea of the order of salvation from a Wesleyan perspective. If you Google the term order of salvation, what you'll tend to find is a lot of Calvinist sites. So Calvinists do a good job about talking about their understanding of the order of salvation. But I wanted to make sure there was a Wesleyan voice out there. So again, this is just kind of like a roadmap from here to heaven.
So why should pastors and their lay people care one whit about this? I mean, who cares? Or we're getting along fine without it, but you're wanting to turn our attention back to it. So why should we care?
Yeah. Yeah, well, let me tell you a story in relation to that. So this year, 2025, is an anniversary year for young John Wesley's life, his spiritual experience. 300 years ago, he was coming through Oxford. He was preparing to be a priest in the Church of England, and he encountered some books that really gripped his heart with the idea that God doesn't want us to just go through the motions. God is looking for us to be 100% sold out. God is looking for a pure heart, for a single-minded devotion to himself. And Wesley bought into that vision, embraced it. But then for the next 13 years, he struggled, he tried and failed and was frustrated in his spiritual life. And he finally came to realize that it was because he was putting the cart before the horse. He was expecting to try and get holy enough to be pleasing to God before God would ever assure him of salvation and have a sense of forgiveness and justify him, put him right in the sight of God. And so once he finally got the understanding that we're put right with God, we're justified by simple faith in Jesus, the sufficiency of Jesus' sacrifice, then Wesley had his heartwarming experience at Aldersgate, felt that he had an assurance of salvation, and then out of that began to pursue holy living and sanctification out of a sense of assurance instead of trying to earn or work his way up to a sense of assurance of forgiveness.
That's a great answer. Start with John Wesley. But why? So if what problem does that help a modern day contemporary pastor solve? I mean, if the order is, and I, by the way, I am with you on this. I think every single person in the pews that have to include the pastor as well ought to know where they are at on the order of salvation. And it's a little bit hard to know that if you don't know it. But if it helps us solve a pastoral problem, what is the problem it helps solve?
Right. So there are lots of people walking around in life today who tend to think, I'm a pretty good person. I'm a good neighbor. I'm a good citizen. You know, I haven't killed anybody. And so I must be fine with God. And there's a tendency to think that just being decent and moral is enough. And so the order of salvation helps to expose the truth of where are we really at in our relationship with God and what does it take to be right with God?
Mm. There's a couple of really big things on this that are a little bit unique to some people's imaginations. One is prevenient grace. That's kind of like the very, very first thing. We are sinful creatures. We need something outside of ourselves to help solve the problem of sin. Prevenient grace seems to be that very thing. What is prevenient grace?
Yeah. So another idea kind of floating around in American society is that we all just naturally have enough free will that if we up and decide to follow God, make a decision for Jesus, we can do that all on our own. And the reality of the situation is Scripture tells us that we are deeply, deeply sinful, that sin has so messed us up that left to our own devices, we could never choose to or follow Christ or understand salvation or any of that. We will naturally resist God. And so prevenient grace, the word prevenient means coming before. Mm-hmm. Prevenient grace is the grace that comes before we're ever converted, before we ever say yes to Jesus. He is already the good shepherd who's going out to the sheep who's wandered away from the sheepfold. And he's the one who's chasing after us, taking the initiative to draw us to himself. So the only reason we say we can say yes to God is because he's saying yes to us first, chasing us down.
Yeah, one of the things we've done here at Wesley Biblical Seminary for a long time, Jerome, is take guys out to the prison with us. And I got a van load of guys. We're headed out there. I usually say to them before we get out of the van, guys, you don't have to worry about going in there starting anything. The Lord's already inside. He's already started the process of these guys coming to know him. He is at work. You just need to join in with the work he's already doing. Does that kind of help us understand prevenient grace?
Absolutely. It takes some of the pressure off. It doesn't totally take our responsibility for sharing the gospel away, but it does give a sense of relief that, like you say, we're not in this by ourselves. Jesus is with us. We're cooperating with him.
So then we get saved. After salvation, there is a step called growth in grace. And I think that people really need to be convinced of this, that the Lord intends you to grow after you get saved. I think we have maybe a theology in this country that says, I'm saved, I'm going to heaven. That's all that needs to happen now. But I think this book, and I think an understanding of the order of salvation, suggests something a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure. There's like you say, a temptation just to think, well, I've got my ticket to heaven punched, and so I'm good to go no matter what I do from here on out. But, you know, if we talk in terms of being born again, once a baby is born, it needs to grow up. There's such a thing as failure to thrive, right? And Scripture calls us to mature, to become adult, spiritually speaking. And so there's a definite place for growth in grace. And that was part of the genius of Wesley's early Methodists. You know, he gathered together people who were interested in getting saved and then new converts, even people who were struggling with old addictions and bad habits. He gathered them together in groups and helped them to grow through group discipleship.
Yeah, so there's, and it, what we would consider, I think we have a terminology for these things that help you to grow, and it's called the means of grace. There's two sides of this means. There is the work of piety, the works of piety, and then the other side is the works of mercy. So tell us real quick, after you get saved, you really need to get earnest about the works of piety so that you can make some progress towards the holiness that the Lord wants for you. Describe to me the works of piety.
Yeah, works of piety are more directly oriented towards God. If you think in terms of almost like a map or something like that, works of piety are more vertically oriented. Works of mercy are more horizontally oriented. So works of piety are ways of loving the Lord our God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. And works of mercy are ways of loving our neighbor as ourselves, if you think in terms of Jesus' two great commandments. So prayer, public worship, reading of Holy Scripture are works of piety. And then works of mercy are things like feeding the poor and the hungry and taking care of the people around us in very practical ways.
Yeah.
And neither of those are ways of earning brownie points with God or merit badges or anything like that.
Yeah, I think what we say is
there are ways. Yeah.
Right. They're not meritorious. They can't earn you anything. But. I think they are necessary for salvation in so much as if you're not doing them, that tells us a lot about your Christianity right there.
Yeah. The way I talk to my students about this is think about any relationship you have, a dating relationship, a friendship, anything like that. If you ignore, if you neglect the person you're in a relationship with long enough, that relationship's going to wither up and die.
And there's, as you say, the two sides is the piety thing, the prayer, Bible study, as you say, going to church, being in a small group, the Lord's Supper, fasting. Mm-hmm. Who fasts anymore? By the way, let's stop right there. What do we lose in our Christian faith when we don't do something that Jesus clearly expected us to do? Fasting. I don't know of anybody that has a regular program of fasting. What do we lose on that one? It's just one of the works of piety. But my goodness, who does that anymore?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a way of detaching ourselves from the clinginess of the world around us in order to take some time to focus especially on God.
And I think John Watson said twice a week, well, we do this on Wednesdays and Fridays. And he was drawing on the early Christians in the Didache, the early discipleship manual they had, that they did it twice a day, Wednesdays or Fridays. Wesley comes along and says, let's pick up on that. Obviously, other people were doing it. Calvinists were fasting. Lutherans were fasting. Wesley, however, picked up on it and said, we're going to do this because there's something about it that helps us to grow. More than that, there's something about it that helps us understand the grace of God. And that these are all means of grace. So there's the works of piety, including fasting, but then there's also works of mercy. And, you know, I know you know this, Jerome. We wrote a book about the doctrine of good works. It was tough finding churches that regularly do good works outside of their church. Why is that such a problem today in the church?
Well, because of the success of Christianity in influencing civilization, there's come to be this expectation that social services, that the government, and so forth, should be doing these sorts of things. And so almost like we've become the victims of our own success, that's been offloaded from the church onto the government, onto private organizations that are for profit, and that kind of thing.
What does Matt Friedman lose in his spiritual life when he doesn't have a work of mercy on a weekly basis?
Yeah, Wesley actually warned against the danger of offloading charity, works of mercy, because he says it puts a barrier between you and the people you're trying to help. It becomes very easy to treat them as objects, to pat yourself on the back, and you lose something when you're not face-to-face with the people whom you're helping.
We recognize that these works of piety, works of mercy, they're not meritorious, but we do feel like they're necessary for salvation. And it's not, that's just not a Wesleyan line. That's a line we get from the Lutherans and the Calvinists. That's the line they used.
Yeah.
Wesley later on picked up on it, not nearly as strongly as they were stating it, but nonetheless, we believe it's necessary to get to the next level. So we have prevening grace, comes salvation. We have growth in the means of grace. Then we have something that's really important. And again, I don't think we talk about it nearly enough. That is entire sanctification. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about that. What's that mean?
Right. So entire sanctification is the idea in a Wesleyan understanding that we can come to the place by God's grace that His love, His holy love, fully governs our hearts and lives so that we are enabled by God to obey the two great commandments and truly love God with our whole heart and truly love our neighbor as ourselves. We will still make mistakes. We still will be ignorant we'll still be tempted. There are all these qualifications, but the bottom line is by the grace of the Lord Jesus, we're enabled to obey His two great commandments that He gave us.
We're talking with Jerome Van Kuyken. He is the author of an editor of the new book that's just out, and you can go to Amazon.com and get it right now. Other booksellers, Reclaiming the Order of Salvation, the Evangelical Wesleyan Perspectives, Reclaiming the Order of Salvation. We want you to get a copy of it, friends. Listen, Jerome, when we talk about getting to that next level, that you can be full of the grace of God, you can be full of the love of God, I love what we're doing lately with it. It seemed to be like a few decades ago, we were still talking about a lot of rule following. And I believe in rules. I believe in following the rules. Not if there's a rule out there and there's 1,000 commands in the New Testament, I want to obey them. But I think what I hear more and more theologians like you and the ones we have here at Wesley Biblical Seminary talking more about love, how holiness really ought to be understood in the rubric of love. Talk to us about love and entire sanctification.
Right. And so if we think about the relationship between outward rules and the inward motivation of love, we might think of it in terms of the relationship between like a trellis and a rose bush or a grapevine. In order for that rose bush to really flourish and be all it's meant to be, it's got to have some kind of external supports and structures. But if you have a really nice trellis, but you have no life, no living thing that's growing on it, then it's worthless. And so in the same way, rules can guide, can structure our love, our relationship with God and others, but rules just for rules' sakes can be just smothering. They're just like a skeleton without any life in it.
Beautiful. And I think that's one of the things the law, Torah, teaches us, that without love, they can be very stifling. Listen, you would know this, Jerome, but coming We've always started doing it, but coming in years in my little corner of the seminary, we're really going to hunker down on the order of salvation, the means of grace, and then knowing the content of the faith as discipleship. Let's talk about the ordo real quick. By the way, the Latin for it is ordo salutis. And I love to say that because it makes people think I'm smarter than I really am. You got to throw out as much Latin as you know, I think, Jerome, to let them know you got a PhD. So the ordo salutis, the order of salvation, how do we best deliver that to lay people so that they understand completely, fully what it is and what it means to them? How do we get that to lay people?
Yeah, well, one of the illustrations that I have used, and I actually use it in the Creed We Need book, is the illustration of getting on a highway. And so you have like the entrance ramp, you have the merging lane, you have the fast lane. That's one way of talking about it, of illustrating it. Another way in my classes, I use developmental metaphors. You have somebody before they're born, and then they're born, and then they need to grow, and then there's becoming an adult.
Right.
And, you know, I'm dealing with 18 to 21-year-olds, and so adulting is kind of a big developmental task that they have on their horizon. So these are ways of trying to talk about the order of salvation in a way that people can grasp easily.
So what would entire sanctification be in that biologically growing up thing? Do you ever try to nail that down with your students?
Yeah, I talk about it in terms of being adult. In like the NIV, for instance, they'll use the language of maturity, and a challenge or a limitation of that is, you know, we're always maturing. That can sound like it's just constantly growing, developing, and there's no fixed point. But in our culture and in many cultures, there's a clear understanding of at some point, you're not just growing and growing, you become an adult. And once you become an adult, then there are responsibilities. You know, you have to keep adulting, you have to keep growing and having responsibilities, but there's a clear line. And cultures other than ours even have specific rituals
right. That
they'll go through in order to mark that.
Right. No, I love that. That's a great way of doing it. I think Stan Key has suggested that one of the ways you could do it is using the Exodus map. Mm-hmm. You know, first step of salvation is get across the Red Sea, then you grow, then the means of grace, and finally you get across the Jordan River into the Promised Land is the entire sanctification piece. I think that's I think we got to think about how to do that. And still, I want to get back. How do we deliver that to our people? I like all the metaphors. I think those are important. But do we preach on it? Do we teach on it? I mean, what's going to be the best way to make sure our people know that they know where they're at on that order and how to get to the next level?
Right. Well, I think this is where we can take a cue from our Reformed brothers and sisters, because they take training, education in the church, mm-hmm. Christian education, very, very seriously. And so part of the problem is that we shortchange our people because we don't want to introduce big words to them. We don't want to introduce anything at all complicated. And so we end up just sort of coddling people intellectually and spiritually. And believe me, I understand the importance of meeting people where they're at.
Right.
But we can't just leave them where they're at.
Right.
We've got to grow them. We've got to educate them. Take Christian education in the church seriously and introduce some of these terms into our sermons even, or do a sermon series. You know, this would be a great sermon series to do around, you know, if you're thinking of Lent, for instance, just walk through the order of salvation to prepare people for Easter.
Beautiful idea. I've often thought, you know, I just retired from the church last January, but I thought, you know what, that thing needs to be over there on that wall. You know, just a stair step of thing from a prevenient grace to heaven, and just say, where are you at? Point to it often. Well, I think we need to preach on it. We need to teach on it. As you said, I also think the best way to get anything to anybody is one-on-one. Finally, everybody in the church needs to have an annual conference with the pastoral team, someone on the pastoral team to say, where are you at? Do you know how to get to the next level? Let me suggest how to get to the next level. I'm becoming more and more convinced it's a critical thing. We got to start teaching it and treating it like it's critical. Means of grace. How do you get people doing all those works of piety and works of mercy?
Right. Introducing them to them and then making the opportunities available.
We start doing this in our church by saying, you're not going to be on the board unless you're doing them. And the pastor is always going to be doing them if he's chairman of the board or whatever he is. And then just start really introducing these concepts that way. We called them the habits of a day springer. That day spring was the name of the church. So we just send, and we just once a month would just read through them like a responsive reading. Then here it is. How do we get, I think the first level is the order. Next level is the means of grace to know how to get to the next level on the order. But then people just need to know the content of their faith. And Jerome, I don't think enough of us know the Nicene Creed. I don't think enough of us know what it means. I don't think enough of us know what the order of the Bible, the chronological stuff, the doctrines of the faith. What's going to be the best way that people get that in a church?
Right. Well, there are certainly catechisms. You've written one. Tim Tennant has one available through Seedbed. The little book, The Creed We Need, introduces some of the basics. There are resources out there. But again, we've got to recognize what's out there and then implement it in the church. People just left to themselves are going to be pretty clueless about what's available.
I just wonder if this isn't the whole nine yards. Discipleship in the church means knowing where you're at on the order of salvation and how to get to the next level, the means of grace, and then just the content of our faith. It's going to come through all the avenues you've already suggested, preaching and teaching. I think this is an important book. I think people need to talk more about these kinds of things. The name of the book is Reclaiming the Order of Salvation. Jerome, I'm starting to like ending up our interviews with some rapid-fire questions. You only get one sentence per challenge, okay? So I know you academic guys like to, of course, I'm one of those academic guys. You academic guys like to do many dissertations on subjects, but I'm giving you one sentence. So you ready to go here?
Okay.
Yeah. He doesn't know if he's ready to go or not. It just kind of depends on what the questions are. All right, here we go. One doctrine related to salvation you wish every Wesleyan could explain in 60 seconds. You don't get 60 seconds. You want one doctrine that they could explain. What would it be?
Yeah, entire sanctification.
Good. Love that. A Wesley misunderstanding you hear all the time that you'd love to correct.
No holiness but social holiness oftentimes gets misunderstood.
I just want to sit down and talk about that one. All right. Can't do it. Rapid fire. All right. A word or phrase you retire from salvation debates because it confuses more than it helps.
Let's see. Wow. Well, I mean, an older one would be the term eradication.
Yeah, I like that. The chapter or theme in this book you'd tell pastors to read first and why?
For pastors, I think that the chapter on conversion is going to cover a lot of bases. But the other one that's just fascinating to me is the one on glorification, because we oftentimes just don't think about that quite so much.
Who's the scholar that takes a conversion one?
Mark Bird did conversion. Laura Dahl did glorification.
Who did glorification?
Laura Dahl.
Very nice.
The Wesleyan scholar in training.
Very good. So last one here, rapid fire. If you could put one thought or one sentence from this new book that you've edited on a billboard, what would the thought or what would the sentence out of the book be?
Where are you at?
You mean where you at on the order?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it. I like that. And I've already told you what I think about that. Every pastoral team needs to be sitting down with every person in the church every year to ask that very question. Where are you at on this order? All right, Jerome. Hey, man, this has been great. The book is Reclaiming the Order of Salvation, Evangelical Wesleyan Perspectives. And you can get that book as well as The Creed We Need, as well as The Judas We Never Knew, all books that Van Kuyken here has been intensely involved with. You can get all those on Amazon. But we're really interested today in Reclaiming the Order of Salvation, a clear, pastoral-friendly retrieval of the Wesleyan way of salvation. And it connects a lot of things, folks. Discipleship, assurance, holiness. Study it personally. Use it with leaders. Preach with greater confidence. Just pick up a copy through the Francis Asbury Society's online store or just go to Amazon.com. So, Jerome, hey, man, been beautiful. Thanks so very much.
Yes, thanks for having me back.
All right. By the way, the only one we've ever had back. So I just, we're talking tall cotton here. So that's a wrap. My wife thanks you. My daughter and her husband thanks you. My five sons and their wives thank you. The grandkids thank you. And I can assure you, I thank you for listening to Life Changing Discipleship today. Love God, live clean, keep the faith. God bless. Love you, folks. We'll see you back here real soon.